Today's episode is brought to you by Bet365, who offer a wide range of bets, including first, last, or anytime scorers, with over 45 million members. It's the world's favourite online betting company. With games being played nearly every day, you can use the Bet365 Bet Builder to combine match results, players to score, number of goals, and more to create your own personalised bet. Use Bet365 Match Live features to follow every moment through live graphics and text for a deeper analysis. Bet365 is the world's favourite online betting company. The app can be downloaded from Google Play and Apple App Store. Over 18s only. Please gamble responsibly. Hello and welcome to From the Rookery, brought to you by The Athletic. We are here as a social distance podcast once more. My name is John, with me is Jason.
Hello there.
And Mike.
25 podcasts we did when there was no football. If only this was the 26th, 27th with no football. It was much more fun without any football to talk about, wasn't it? Good evening.
Good evening. We've just watched, two of us on the television.
Endured.
This is where we're going to go, ladies and gentlemen. Watford 1, Southampton 3. It was live on the television for everybody to see. Hey, fingers crossed, some people more interested in watching Leicester against Chelsea in the FA Cup and didn't see Watford pretty much put in a performance, Mike, that... You know, we know there is not going to be a quick end to our relegation battle, and that was the performance that will not get you out of a relegation battle.
The more people that see it, as far as I'm concerned, the better, because I think the entire team should be ashamed of themselves. I've spoken to my son, listeners will know Arlo, 8-year-old Arlo, and my mum. She's older than eight. They both had one thing in common this afternoon. Arlo was in tears when Southampton scored their second, and so was my mum, in floods of tears, and not because they're not winning, not because Watford aren't going to win the Cup, not because Watford aren't going to win the Premier League, but because they are desperate for this team that we all love to turn it round, to show some spark, to show some sign that we're in with a fighting chance. On the pitch, they didn't look like they had any fight, any spark, any fighting chance, and off the pitch, they're shooting themselves in the foot as well. It's quite difficult to hear two generations of your family in tears. Now, you can argue that they need to grow up a bit and they need to be older and wiser, and it's a good learning curve for Arlo and so on and so forth. They'll get over it. But it shows how much they care. It shows how much we care. We talked about doing, 25 podcasts while there's no football to talk about. Everyone listening to this podcast downloads it and puts up with me, puts up with all our waffling because they care. They're desperate for this mob to turn it around. On the pitch is one thing. And I think the reason that on the pitch started so badly was because of what happened off the pitch.
Now, Mike, you were lucky to be at the game today, again, doing your Opta duties.
Yep.
Therefore, you would have felt a little bit, seen maybe a little bit more, maybe even heard at a distance by a shout what the vibes were around that team today.
Yeah, there was no vibe. It was flat. It was dispiriting. It was... empty, it was soulless, it was awful. I hated every single minute. Just the whole atmosphere from the minute they kicked off was subdued, would be putting it mildly. And it seemed to me, and I you accuse me of over exaggerating if you like, maybe I am. It felt to me like that side was sulking. They wandered around the pitch aimlessly, didn't create anything in the slightest. Southampton played well. We always have to caveat this with the fact that teams aren't just going to turn up and roll over because we want Watford to do well. Southampton play high up the pitch and they're a difficult team to play against. They're in decent form with players in good form. But Watford had their chins on their chests, rounded shoulders. They looked like they were sulking. And I think that malaise comes from the last 24 hours. What's happened in the last 24 hours? And we know that the squad was shorn of three potential players.
As I'm sure you are aware of, the day after Watford lost 1-0 away at Burnley, it was Andre Gray's birthday, and as you like to do on your birthday, you like to celebrate. Unfortunately, this is a different time, and Andre had a birthday party with over 20 people at his house, and amongst those guests were Domingos Quina and Nathaniel Chalobah. And the line, or the description, we were told that these players weren't part of the squad today because of health and safety, so they could be kept separate from the squad if they had been infected by the coronavirus as part of an ongoing disciplinary action. So they weren't there.
No.
We'll talk to see if we missed them maybe in terms of the game in the second half, but it was more than that.
Yeah, I think so. They missed the game. Now, I've got a problem with this on a number of levels. We need to get this chronology straight, of course, because Andre Gray was on the Black Lives Matter march. That was before football. Before football was back. We have to accept that he put himself in a situation there where the risk of transmission or contracting the disease was high. He was in a high density population with a lot of other people before football was due to come back. We have to accept that, and we have to say, where was the uproar then? Cards on the table, but that was before football came back, so he knew he was going to be tested before anything happened. He knew he was going to be kept apart. He's done that, fine. Presumably he would have told the club about it. There were some professional shots of him there, so it wasn't being done under the table or anything like that. So that happened. Whether or not that was a good idea, just because we believe in that particular movement, is by the by. What happened this weekend is a lot worse than that. For a whole host of reasons. One, you probably would have got away with it if you just don't put it on Instagram.
That was the silly thing, yeah.
So just by putting it on Instagram, that tells me how much you care. So I'm going to go back to my 8-year-old son and my OAP mother, reduced to tears. Such is their desperation for this team to do well. And juxtapose that with three youngsters without a care in the world, won't have to work a day. If they're sacked from Watford, for example, and no suggestion they will, if they are, they wouldn't have to work again for a day in their life. Not only that, but their team is in the midst of an appallingly difficult relegation battle that could have huge ramifications for the club going forward. It will have immediate ramifications for personnel at the club if they do get relegated. And the fact that they couldn't wait to have this party, fine, you could argue that the social distancing rules are so furry that, you know, he could have misunderstood it. Don't put it on Instagram, mate. Show you care. Show some guts. Show some discipline. Show some fortitude. But they chose not to. And in doing that, those three players showed they don't care. They don't care about me. They don't care about Jace. They don't care about you. They don't care about my mum, my son. They don't care about Watford. Because if they did, they wouldn't do that. Appalled, absolutely appalled. Not only, but take Watford out of the equation. We're in the middle of a pandemic, a health emergency, which has taken people close to people we care about. And so take all the Watford things out of it. Take all the professional side out of it. Take how let down we feel about it. What about the health side of things? The BAME community we know is at a higher risk. Domingos Quina, Nathaniel Chalobah, Andre Gray all fall into that category, yet there they are parting away. People we know and love and care about have lost people, and here they are on Instagram. It's not their fault they're role models. I don't agree with footballers having to be role models, but there they are. They couldn't keep the phone in their pocket and just get your party over and done with. They had to share it with the world. And yeah, you could think, well, it's a lapse of judgment, but come on. And I find the whole thing distasteful to the extent that I've been unhappy since I found out about it. And this whole thing, this whole day, this whole last 48 hours has been awful for me. I found the whole thing, I just want to give up. Because what's the point? What's the point when players don't take responsibility, A, from a societal point of view, and B, for the club that so many people care about? And you may say I'm going over the top, but I don't care, because, you know, we've got a first-hand experience of people losing their lives. People care about this football club, and it feels like it's been thrown back in our faces. And I think there will be people, there will be players who will feel similar. I suspect the staff at Watford will feel badly let down. And it felt to me that that's caused a rift. I'm reaching, I don't know. But Watford are in a relegation battle in a game they had to win, or at least not lose. And they wandered around like it was a six-a-side tournament on a Spanish beach. And I'm just reaching for reasons why. Just the whole body language. Everything was flat. Everything was quiet. Everything was, it was just so low, and disjointed and distracted. And I can't think of any other reason than for that. And if I feel like this, then how do other players whose careers depend on it? How do people at Watford whose careers depend on it? People who might have been affected by this thing. It really is the pits, and that performance is the perfect full stop to a really, really grim 2 days as far as I'm concerned.
You're listening to From the Rookery End.
But Jason, there was a game of football that we've all sat and watched, and the ramifications, what Mike's talked about, could easily be there, but they went into that game without those players, and they tried to play a game of football. How did they try and play that game of football? Was there something different that they tried since Burnley?
Well, they sort of went back to the what you'd call the standard formation, the expected starting 11, I guess, with Pereira coming back in, mixed the centre backs up again, went for the Dawson-Cathcart partnership this time at the back. In terms of the way we played, Mike said before, we got what we expected from Southampton. They're very good away from home. They put teams under pressure. They like to press. And we didn't deal with it. We just didn't seem to cope. I think the traditional way to try and cope with the press is just to get the ball out wide and then sort of move it up the channels, get the bodies out there. We didn't. At times we just sort of lumped it up the middle, either to Troy or just into the middle of the park to see if we could get the second ball. There were times where we did try and get it wide, and when we got it wide, it was almost predictable. I think at one point I saw Kiko Firmino pointing at Sarr, almost like, look, run up there, mate, because that's where I'm going to stick the ball. And there was a lot of that, just trying to hit it, hit and hope over the top for Sarr to run onto. They were already wise to that. He's up against Bertrand, who's no slouch. It was all, yeah, very predictable, not working, and we just didn't seem to change that approach. The only positive, I think, from me in the first half was when Pereira moved over to the right-hand side and got involved on the same side as Sarr, had the ball at his feet and actually had someone to give the ball to. And that worked quite well, but we just didn't do it enough. It was the only positive from that first half. But for some reason, we tried it two or three times. And the rest of the time, it was lots of either, yeah, hit and hopes from the fullbacks or from the centre-backs. The odd dink over the top from Decore, almost sort of John Eustace style, to hope that someone would be able to sort of run onto it. Deeney, okay, he gave the big guys at the back, was it Bednarek and Vestergaard, tried to give them a battle, but again, a lot of the time he was sort of outbattled himself. Vestergaard can deal with that all day long, I think, and it was just a struggle.
The other thing, you know, to go on from the point I made, the intensity was completely lacking. I think defensively, Jace, you talked about us struggling to, you know, we played almost, the possession stats were quite even in the first half, but the game was almost exclusively played in Watford's half, such was their inability to break out. But there wasn't any intensity in the defence. I mean, you talk about Ings' goal was almost took place in slow motion, didn't he? Sort of lolloped forward a couple of paces, plonked it in the bottom right hand corner. Well, there was so much space.
Yeah, my thoughts about that. He skipped past Cathcart too easy. I think Dawson hadn't anticipated that. There was a big gap between Dawson and Messina, and I'm not sure if that was Messina out of position or just the fact that Dawson seemed to be watching. Then by the time Ings has got away from Cathcart, he's almost sort of vertically level with him. So there's that big gap there. Mm. And he's left having to lunge to try and get it. And you can't give Ings that space. Ings is such a good natural finisher. He's found the corner easily. Foster's not expecting it either.
No.
And just sort of watched it into the bottom corner. It just, yeah, horrible goal to concede.
Yeah, and it just summed up that. I think that goal summed up the first half perfectly. Completely listless. And Geordie made the point on our WhatsApp group. We are wasting, since we've come back from the restart, we have wasted every single first half we've played in. Now, that's not exclusive to Watford. Anyone who's watched any Sky Sports or BT Sports will have heard the commentator say, well, it's not many goals in the first half, is there? And club teams are struggling to get going and get motoring in these first halves. And yes, I've said it before, there are mitigating factors, and being in the ground again today is deathly quiet. It is weird, it's odd, it's peculiar. But what you expect is that when you're fighting for your life, you find ways. And I think some of the Watford players said, oh, we've got little ways we're going to fire each other up. For the Leicester game, they came out in drims and drabs. They didn't even walk out together.
Yeah.
And it's little things like that. We said in the break, Nigel Pearson's going to use this to bring this team together, to get them to understand what they need to do, treat it as a mini lead, come out of the traps quickly. They've done the exact opposite. They look less than the sum of their parts. And I think that first half was the perfect example of exactly what we didn't want.
Well, yeah, we talked about, before that playoff final in Cardiff, and the way that team was in the tunnel as they came out. I know it's not the same, but the fact they come out in dribs and drabs, it's like, well, that's just one thing. You're not coming out as a unit.
Yeah.
In a straight line.
Yeah, it's a little thing.
Little things.
Just going back to the goals, I think the most annoying thing about that for me was it came not long after we did actually have a chance.
Yeah.
Our first little moment of positivity down that right-hand side where Saar did get behind.
Yeah.
Didn't quite get the cross right, as often happens with Saar.
Yeah.
Maybe went too late, and the guys had already made their runs in the box. But at that point, you're thinking, oh, right, okay, right, we've got him behind. Let's build on that.
Yeah.
A couple of minutes later, we're 1-0 down.
Yeah, because they showed signs of, there were the briefest of brief flickers of how they were, of working out how to unlock Saar down that right side. Get Bertrand to commit, boom. Send Saar on his way, and it happened a couple of times, and that time he did get him behind. I was half off my seat. All he had to do was square it, and he took that split second too long, didn't he? He decided to wait, look up, which I've asked him to do on this podcast before. So go on, Ish, you've got time to look up, and he did that. And so if you are listening to the podcast, thanks for taking my advice. Never do that again. they squandered that opportunity. So there were that little glimpses, but so fleeting in that first half. It was quite extraordinary to watch it unfold. The body language, everything about it was, you couldn't have designed a worse 45 minutes in every regard. It was complete in its awfulness.
Second half though, Jason, we expect a rocket from Nigel, and we suspect a response. And you could say that the 15 minutes after the second half, it was like, right, that's amazing, lads. That's what you should have been trying to do after you went 1-0 down. In fact, a little bit before that. A little bit of fight, a little bit of quickness, just do better. And it started to fall a bit more, but not perfectly, into place.
Yeah, it was better. We were sort of stringing some passes together, playing better football. It wasn't quite Burnley second half, or start of the second half, but it was better. What was similar to Burnley is that we were winning a lot of set pieces, and in the main, making a lot of those. And the best chances, again, seem to come from set pieces, either direct or from second phase. I think Hughes had a couple of goes from outside the box, which, as we were told during the game, we've not scored from outside the box this season, so I'm not actually sure why he bothered, but you never know.
DCW made the point we haven't scored many inside the box either.
Exactly. We're third lowest scorers in the division, I think. So it was sort of the encouraging signs, and when you're still only 1-0 down, then the hope is still there. But
the hope was taken away by a terrible, terrible distribution from Ben Foster, which had been almost seen minutes beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that listens to the podcast will know I've been impressed with Ben Foster this year. Well, I think everyone has. It's no secret he's been great for us. But the goal came from a mistake. If you haven't seen it, then he threw it out. Ings, it was far too short. Ings intercepted it, galloped on and slotted it home. He'd done exactly the same thing. I'm not quite sure how 5 minutes maybe before, 10 minutes before, when he tried to throw it out to Adam Messina on the left hand side, undercooked it. Messina left nowhere near it, and there's a warning sign there. Don't do that again. Because it's a dangerous situation. He did it again, and the game was done. there and then in that minute. And it's a mistake, and you have to give Ben Frost a little bit of latitude, because we've said ad nauseum on the pod, he's kept us in more games than we probably care to mention, and we would have been in a much worse state if it wasn't for him. So I'm not going to be too critical. It was a howling error. It just compounded the complete ineptitude, really, of what followed afterwards. It was an encouraging 10-15 minutes, but what followed was just a baffling array of dismal park football, really. I just found the whole thing dumbfounding. I just watched agog. Now, what I will say, actually, before I forget, because in all this ranting, we'll kick off at Watford. Again, I haven't seen this back, but I do want to know what VAR is doing for these penalty shouts. So, Saar on, I can't remember if it was before or after his chance in the first half. Bertrand had his shirt in both hands. He had a big chunk of it. I was sat in the Sir Elton John stand. I don't know how far that is, on the halfway line. He's pulling him back.
Yeah.
DCW on the WhatsApp group made the point, was he impeded? Well, he had his shirt. So you take it, that's a penalty. If it's in, that's in the middle of the park, that is a free kick and probably a booking all day long. So why that isn't looked at is, well, it's presumably it's looked at, or maybe
it did say on Sky that it had been looked at. It hadn't been stopped and paused. You know, said we're looking for the review and all that stuff, but it had been looked at and nothing was called back.
So I watched earlier on before I left, I watched Arsenal against Sheffield United, and Arsenal got a penalty, and that classic thing, he didn't foul him, but there's contact. So he's gone down. So therefore it's a penalty. You can't get much clearer than you seeing a hand with a bright yellow shirt clutching it. It's a penalty. It's a penalty. And then in the second half, Craig Dawson, both hands, pulled to the ground.
Yeah.
And again, in the middle of the park, it's a yellow card and a free kick. Not a question, not a debate, it just is. So what on earth is going on there is beyond me. I'm not going to use it as an excuse, but it does sort of speak to how dispiriting a lot of football has been this year. The whole, you know, not only have we got no crowds, we've got VAR again, not being fit for purpose, and again, not coming to Watford's benefit. If you look, you know, we probably wouldn't have gone on to win the game, but it's just, you just sit there and think, well, what is the actual point if these aren't going to get pulled up? And then we did get back into the game through an own goal, 2-1. And you think, right, Watford, lads, you've been gifted this. It was a lovely cross in from João Pedro. He got the ball in, and he asked the question. Devilishly difficult to deal with. 9 times out of 10, that's always probably going to be a goal one way or the other. But then within minutes, it's gone again.
Well, they say there was the substitutions, 3 at once. Holobas, João Pedro and Welbeck came on in about the 73rd, 74th minute. Pereira, straight swap with João Pedro. Welbeck on for Hughes, which you would say, hey, that's trying to, you know, go a bit further, be a bit more attacking. And Messina for Holobas was a straight swap. And again, we saw late on, a few minutes after that, Pesetto came on for Firmino. Sort of a straight swap, but you would think Pesetto had a slightly more attacking minded, but maybe not necessarily with Firmino. Those subs, Jason, are they the subs you would have made? Can you see maybe other substitution maybe have made if a certain three players were part of the conversation?
Oh, a difficult one, because at that time I probably, like Mike, was feeling a bit low and thought the game had gone. And like you said, a bit more positive. We had a bit of a rant after the Burnley game about the substitutions that were made because they weren't game changing in any way, shape or form. It was just like for like. So yeah, you can see that different types of players coming on. Hughes, let's say, going off. Welbeck coming on, give something more in the final third. Rather than someone who just sort of put in a shift, someone that might be able to unlock the defence, an unknown quantity in Pedro as well. Mm. You don't know what you're going to get from him. I'm not sure. I think, was it Holobas that put the cross in for the goal? Rather than Pedro.
It was a good cross. He got a goal from it, yeah.
And it was, after all those sort of, we talked about where we did get the ball wide and did get Saar in, we didn't get any sort of decent final balls in. So to get a decent final ball in the box, look at the difference it makes.
Easy mistake to make. An angry 35-year-old.
through the red mist, it was quite hard.
He's 36 now. It wasn't his birthday the other day.
Well,
Jose.
Yeah. That's what I've done it.
So, yeah. And he didn't have a party, as far as we know. There's the difference.
Well, do fair. Who would he invited? You would expect Mrs. Hollenbach. His friends would have come round. He would have gone, thank you for coming, and then just sort of sulking in the corner. But if you look at that you know, Mike, none of those I would have expected Queenan to come on, right? No. I wouldn't have expected Chalabar to come on for any of those. The only one, particularly Hughes, they might have swapped with him, but yeah, it wasn't a straight swap. You could have put Gray on instead of Welbeck, but I wouldn't have done. I would have put Welbeck on ahead of Gray, especially after the last couple of performances. So we didn't particularly feel like we missed out. No. We might have missed out on the fifth substitute if they had been an option. You never know.
No, I don't think we missed out from a personnel point of view. Like I said, and we're not going to dwell on it anymore. I think that's a psychological issue that has gone deep. And I don't think had we had any of those three available today, would they have made any difference. Watford have got a good squad. They have a deep squad and we're able to bring decent players on. Everyone we mentioned there coming on as a substitute has either got hope and promise or is established and experienced. So I don't, you know, them not being in the squad from a football point of view didn't have an impact, I don't think. My question, perhaps for you, Jace, is whether I am over the top about how poor that first half was. I was surprised he didn't make changes at half-time. I mean, perhaps we've answered our question because the first 10, 15 minutes was decent and he's probably gone out and said, right, you've got 10, 15 minutes to make up for it. But such as the fact that it has happened at Leicester, it happened against Burnley, and now it's happened again, I'm just surprised he didn't. I mean, we haven't got any time to waste. You know, we might be out of road now. We might have blown it already. But when you've got 45 minutes left to potentially save your season, I was surprised that he didn't make a change at half time.
I wonder if the fact that we've got another 6 days until the next game is coming to his thinking, perhaps if we had a game midweek, he might have made the changes. But like you say, given that we've got almost a week to the next game, you're right, he's probably then gone, right, go out there, show me something this half. You guys have got us into this mess. Get out there and sort it out. That team, we said that there weren't any surprises. They probably are the best 11 players or fit players at the club at the moment. They're the ones that should be able to put in a performance to get us out of trouble.
I'll give you a positive. I thought Kiko played well again.
Oh, you know, see what? Normally, that's the question I have to ask it. I have to find it. Come on then. So what's the positive? And you know what? I didn't want to ask it. I wasn't in the mood to ask it. It wasn't. But Mike Parkin, after the way you start this podcast,
it's self-preservation. I thought Kiko played well. I thought he looks organised. His positional sense seems to be good. He's solid in that position and he gets forward well and he tries to unlock things. He tries to make things happen. I think he's a really important player for us, and I think he's probably one who can hold his head high after that absolute horror show, because the rest of them, Not for me, Jeff. But yeah, he sort of stuck his head above the parapet more than others. So I think he can sleep soundly tonight. I think the rest of them need to have a long, hard look at themselves. And while we're going in on Ben Foster, be interested your chaps take on the free kick. I mean, as soon as that free kick's given, you know who's going to step up. You know, we said on the WhatsApp group, it's like a penalty for him, such as his ability for it. We've seen it before firsthand. But it didn't look to me that it was in the corner. He got it up and down well, which is obviously difficult to defend. But knowing what's coming, it doesn't necessarily make it easier to defend. But again, it was just sort of like Danny Ings was waved through to shoot for his first.
I don't think Foster likes free kicks. I don't think he likes long shots. In the first half...
Jason, I know he doesn't.
In the first
happens
half,
too often.
Redmond had a go from a free kick about 40 yards out that normally you'd think, what are you doing? Yeah, but knowing that it's Fozzy in goal, we love Fozzy, but knowing it's him in goal, I think that's why they went for it. And perhaps that's why Danny Ings was happy to have a shot for his first goal from outside the 18-yard box, because perhaps, I don't know what it is. Is it another sort of Scott Loach situation? Doesn't like long shots? Yeah, I mean, and you know, they always say when they're central, they say it's quite hard to take those for the taker. And when it's so close to the edge of the box, they say it's really hard to get it up and down. And I think someone said, I can't remember seeing it, but someone said the wall did jump and he still managed to get it up and down. So that is still a very, very good free kick and a very, very difficult one to save. But like you say, he's the positioning, right? And Foster did seem to be quite a way over to one side of his goal.
And I think talking about that preparation and obviously having a dig, seeing long shots as a weakness is fine. You expect the opposition to do their scouting, but Danny Ings was apparently on the TV afterwards saying that they knew kind of what was going to happen. They knew what areas they were going to see the ball in. They knew what areas they were going to be able to exploit. And for the fact that he was able to say that so openly, yeah, we knew what Watford were going to do. And, you know, the game has played out perfectly into their hands. They've won at an absolute canter is really disappointing. And it just does go back to, are we in a relegation battle? Are we in one that we care about? I don't know.
I found that comment really, really hard to swallow as well. Mm. The fact that they knew that they were going to get the ball in and space in the number 10 area, because the way we defend, we press high, but then when the ball's in midfield, we tend to drop back quite quickly to fill in the spaces and fill in the gaps. And you've got the back four, and you've got Kapu who sits deep, and Hughes would be dropping deep as well. And we should have players there. And if you look at when he takes the shot, when Ings takes the shot, there's something like six or seven players around him. And we still give him all that space to get the shot away and get the goal.
Well, I'd like to thank Danny Ings, because if Watford haven't aren't aware that is a weakness for them, maybe it's something they can work on in the next 6 days.
A podcast made by Watford fans for Watford fans from the Rookery End.
Thank you very much for listening to From the Rookery. Remember, you can get a beautiful 40% discount by subscribing to The Athletic. All you have to do is go to theathletic.com/rookeryend. Adam has been writing many, many pieces this week, which you can check out. But also, there was a fantastic article today that was put up by Carl Anker, who we had on the podcast this week, Ryan Connor and Roisin Thomas, about why football crowds are so white. It's written from their point of view. It's written from them speaking to many, many people. And it really is brilliant because it goes back historically, not just things that have happened in the last few weeks. Check that out on The Athletic. And with that 40% discount, it only costs you £2.99 a month or 10p a day. We will have Adam on a special midweek podcast where we'll look back on the last few games, see what he's been up to, and also preview the Chelsea game. That'll be out in the middle of the week. But Watford might have a few days, some things to work on, some helpful tips from Danny Ings to maybe take on board. What is it? And we've had lots of questions from people via Twitter. Yeah, they've asked us lots of questions, many of them quite hard-hitting. If GT was manager now, what would he do with Green and Queener? Well, does the squad of players have the fight for the relegation battle? I would say no, comes from Harry. A really important question. How many coats of primer should you put on a freshly plastered wall before the top coat? That came from Chris Bone. Chris, don't ask us.
Probably quite a few, because by what we've seen today, there's going to be a lot of people punching a lot of walls over the next couple of weeks. So, Chris, get as much primer on there as you possibly can. Let it dry before you punch it.
Ivan Lehane, surely it's time to drop some players and freshen it up. We play well between half-time and the second water break, and that's it. What's the worst that can happen by freshening the team up? Could we freshen the team up? Do we have the players to freshen the team up? Not just the fitness, Jason, but do we have the ability to do that with their abilities?
I don't know, that team kind of picks itself. Who would you look to bring in? Is it like the way we started the Burnley game? Is it Cleverley? Is he good enough to oust the midfield? Maybe one or two. I thought in that first half when we were poor, the midfield did give the ball away more than we would have liked. Mike said about Kiko playing well. I thought Messina had a decent effort today as well. I don't think I'd take them out. The centre backs, you feel like you're just rotating them. He's doing that already, and it doesn't seem to make much difference. Dawson had a great game last Saturday. Not so good today. A few air shots in there today. A few mistakes that he got away with. Cathcart at fault for that first goal. Where do you change it? I mean, do you take Deeney off? What difference does that make?
My big question is actually, is it taking off and changing Deeney being the man up front? And hey, Pedro, let's start him on the left rather than anybody else. We have that choice.
Perhaps he's him or Holly Bass, both pretty decent. You know, perhaps, but very, very difficult to say that Pedro's going to be the answer when we haven't seen him play any Premier League minutes.
And that's why, Mike, one who doesn't play is always the answer.
But let me, look, I think this is simple. I think we're beyond tinkering now. We're beyond personnel. We're beyond even formation. I mean, tactics are important. Formation is important. Personnel. You can't switch a player around and that's going to make a difference now. This is now a team that is demonstrably worse than the sum of its parts. It's a team in name only. It is completely dysfunctional. And this week has come at a very, very good time because all of them, and I do mean all of them, need to sit down individually as a group and work out what the hell they're going to do together to turn this around. Because performances like that on the back of situations that have happened this week aren't good enough from a professional point of view. You know, we're football supporters. We will be there next year, whether they're in the Championship, whether they're in League One the year after that, whether they're in the Bees or Holmes League in 10 years' time. It doesn't matter to us. We'll be there. We'll still be talking about it. We'll still love Watford Football Club. They need to have the professional pride to recognise and see what's happening and to do something about it. There needs to be a lot of soul searching and they need to dig deep and quickly and work out if they're going to do it or not. If you had to ask me today, sat there in the stadium, I was desolate, disconsolate, and I said, this team is done. They are over. They're not standing shoulder to shoulder. They're not that buccaneering side that we've seen so much, that we've enjoyed over the last 5 years. They're not the team that even dug deep for the last couple of minutes against Leicester. They are a disparate band of what looked like disinterested, disenfranchised, demotivated players who just couldn't wait to get home. I know that's not the case. I know when they step over the white line, they want to do well, but they've got to do better. And they have now got a week, 6 days, whatever it is, to work out how they're going to do that. And they need to work that out together or we're dead. That's the long and the short of it. That was appalling today. What happened off the pitch was appalling as well. The reaction to it was dismal. They've let us all down. They've let Arlo down, they've let my mum down, and no one does that and gets away with it. We will stick with them. We will stick with them. And Arlo, mum, I know you're listening, stick with us, we'll be fine, we'll get through it. You know, we're made of stern stuff. I love how much you care, and it means a lot to me. But this team need to be as tough as us. They need to show some fortitude. And I think it was Harry who raised the question, have they got the guts? We're going to find out. And if they haven't, then that's not on us as football supporters. We can't do anything. We give everything we've got. That's not on us. It's on them now. The likelihood is we'll get relegated now, I would say. I think we've got 3 winnable games. If we win those 3, we still might go down. I think the likelihood, from what I've seen today, the body language, the performance, the repeated errors that we're seeing, I would say that team is most likely to get relegated. They might not. There's still a chance. We could still pull off a shock. The other teams are probably, the other podcasts sound exactly as disconsolate as we are. I think the worry I've got is that the 48 hours, the issues, the cracks, and they're evident on the pitch. So they've got a couple of days now to decide how this story ends. It's very much over to them. I think as supporters, a lot of us have now resigned to thinking, well, they haven't really shown anything since they came back that shows they've got the fortitude, the will, the setup. And, you know, you've got to ask questions of Nigel Pearson and Craig Shakespeare. We've been very effusive. We've been very positive about them and their impact since they came in. They have turned things around. They've got us in with a chance, which we didn't have when they came in. But that's 1 win in 10 now. And that was a one-off against Liverpool, which was a 99 out of 100 times we lose that game. We didn't, so it is 1 in 10. But 1 in 10, nowhere near good enough. And those before, they haven't been close, really. They haven't been, you know, Villa threw it away, Everton threw it away. Abject on Thursday, abject again today. So it's up to them. They've got to decide how this story ends. And they need to lock themselves away. They need to sit at home tonight, watch the video again, work out whether they're going to stand shoulder to shoulder. And don't let us down again like that, please. Let's not go out with a whimper. If we get relegated, fine. We'll be back in August, whenever it is. But that's not good enough. Don't let us down.
Don't let yourself down.
That's the big question. Are they willing to sacrifice their professional pride, or are they going to go out with them and giving it everything they've got? And time will tell. I think tinkering isn't going to stop anything now. We're well past that. We've had chance after chance. Week after week, we've said, if we can just get something there, if we just don't lose there, if we can just nick something there, if they lose here, you know, Villa losing, Brighton winning, it doesn't matter anymore when we are so poor. And it's up to them. We are not a poor squad. We're a poor team, and that needs to change.
We'll be back with some more podcasts, hopefully a little bit more sunshiny. Thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you. I'm off to watch West Ham and Bournemouth from behind my sofa.
Thank you, Mike.
No worries. And not just Mum and Arlo, but stick with it. You know, this is, you've got to have the dark days to appreciate the good. This is particularly bleak. It feels rubbish. Well, let's stick together as supporters, at least. Try and squeeze some enjoyment out the remainder of this season. Come on, you golden boys. Please. Come on, you horns.
He was disappointed after that game, but we should leave this podcast for a special message from Arlo. It was in today's programme, but this is 8-year-old Arlo and his message for the Watford players.
Dear lads, I know this season hasn't always been great, but think about when we beat Liverpool. How did you feel before and after the game? At the start, you might have been nervous, but after, you will have been pumped. Try and remember that feeling for your next game. Feel positive and always stick with it. Whether you win, lose or draw, never give up. Don't doubt and always believe in yourself. Give it your best. I know you can do it. I'm proud of you. Come on, you all! Now from Ireland.